I realized the ability of art for just my own pleasure, but also art for monetization early on. I never really took it seriously. It was always something that, not that it came easily, it was difficult, but I've always, things that are easy, I kind of shied away from because I'm not interested in them. And the one thing about doing something that's difficult is that if, even if it's really super difficult, by the time you get to the end of it, no one's going to be there in the room with you.
Welcome to the Creative Chats Podcast with Mike Brennan. Welcome, friends, to another episode of Creative Chats. It's the podcast for artists, makers, and content creators, where we talk about creativity, the creative process, and story. If you'd like to connect with me, you can do so over on Instagram. I'm at Mike Bone. You can check out some of my work on my website, which is mikebrennan.me. And I would love to extend an invitation to you as a fellow creative person to join our free Facebook group. It's called Daily Creative Habit. And if you head on over to dailycreativehabit.com, it'll forward you right to the Facebook request page and fill out a couple of quick questions and you'll be on your way. And that's an amazing community of a variety of creative people all trying to show up more consistently for their creative craft. So if you've been struggling with showing up, being consistent, leveling up in your creativity, I want to invite you to join our free group. We would love to have you there, and be sure to let me know that you heard about it on the podcast. Now for this week, my guest is Craig Frazier. Now I met Craig probably a couple of years ago at an event called The Thing, which is run by Terry Weaver. And he was one of the speakers there and fellow creatives. And Craig is a licensed Disney artist. He's an author. He's an instructor, creative consultant, and custom painter. I mean, he does amazing stuff with an airbrush. I tried that once and it didn't go so well. And actually mentioning didn't go so well, he's actually the host of a podcast called This May End Badly with Craig Frazier. He is just such a creative force, and I just love seeing the things that he does. He actually has a daily creative habit as well, and I had the pleasure of being one of his subjects most recently from one of the Thing events, and it's great. I love it. He had me with this little Motorhead pencil illustration, and really appreciated that. So I know that you're going to really dig our conversation. Even if you're not a visual artist, Craig has a way of just really cutting through to share his experiences as a creative person, his journey, some of the trials and tribulations of trying to be a professional creative person. And we just talk shop, honestly. So without further ado, I'm going to get out of the way. And here is my conversation, my creative chat with Craig Frazier. Well, Craig, welcome to the Creative Chats show. I'm excited to have you here, my friend.
Oh, thank you. Very, very cool to be here. I've been looking forward to this. I mean, not 7 o'clock in the morning my time, looking forward to it, but still looking forward to it.
Yes. Oh, believe
hence,
me.
Hence coffee.
The coffee, yes. If it were the other way around, I'd be like, yeah, I don't know. We may have to push it later.
Yeah, just a little bit.
So for the sake of our listeners, why don't you just give us a little snapshot of who you are, what you do?
Oh, well, that's just an existential crisis waiting to be discovered. Hi, my name is Craig Frazier. I own Craig Frazier Studios, and I'm here in beautiful downtown Bakersfield, California, where my studio is at. I'm an artist. Basically, if it has mass and occupies space, I will paint on it, even if it moves, because I also do tattooing. But I've been involved with art going way back to when I was a kid. I went to college for 10 years, four different majors, one of them being architecture, also associate of arts and music, associate science in computer science, and associate science in aeronautical engineering. And I put myself through school by airbrushing, but it took 10 years of college to realize that maybe I should just be airbrushing and painting for a living. So didn't waste any of that time. I thoroughly enjoyed all of it. Had a blast, traveled all over the country. I've done workshops, written articles, got 3 books out there, one of them a bestseller, and done series of videos on tech videos on how to paint. So I've had a blast doing this and still doing it. I love the term where I don't really have any goals specifically. I just have a whole lot of plans. That way, because a goal, if you miss it, you missed it. But a plan can only be modified. Like, well, I plan on doing that, you know, so a little bit something different. So right now I am a licensed artist for Disney that's furloughed. I'm just very lucky in the fact that I'm not one of the guys that my sole job was Disney. So we're on the pretty much the waiting list to see what's going to happen in the future. Same thing with Acme and Lucasfilm, all kind of waiting to see what happens. But I currently still work as an artist for Fender guitars, Minaret guitars. I still work as a creative tech consultant for a number of companies. And then I got my shop that I work at here in Bakersfield, which is an automotive custom paint shop. I'm partnered out with Dion Giuliano from Cal Concepts. And my shop is called Air Syndicate. So I've got just a few balls I'm juggling, a few in my basket, just a few. But if it's creative, and plus I got my podcast. I launched about 6 months ago. We're on episode 24. You're coming up. I think you're going to be like episode 28. And it's called This May End Badly with Craig Frazier, which basically is the only caveat I need for anything I do in my life. So I think that's about it. I think covered up. Oh, I'm also marrying my beautiful wife of 27 years, Donna, and I've got a genius son, Simon, and not smarter than me. And he's studying architecture too. Hopefully he actually will do it for a living because I'm paying for it. but he's into 3D printing and he's a drummer. He's a third generation musician in the Bakersfield Philharmonic. He's a percussionist for the Philharmonic. My wife is still a concert associate concert mistress and then her concert master. And then her mother was in her position 10 years ago. So
wow,
that's the fam right there.
Wow, yeah, that's tremendous. I mean, all the things that you said in there, I think a lot of people would be like, I'll just take one of those things and that'd be awesome. But the fact that you've been able to be a part of so many different things and you know, at that level, I mean, that's just awesome. So we're going to dive into a little bit of like, okay, so that's where you are now. That's some of the things you're doing now at this point, but like, how did you get there? Well, we're going to dive into that a little bit, but before that, I want to go back
that's a whole rat's nest right there. I don't get anywhere the easy way. Cause easy way, that's for simps. I'm like, you know, that whole road less traveled. Mm-hmm. I pretty much said, well, there's 3 options. There's the road traveled. There's the road less traveled. Robert Frost got it wrong. There's an area over there with no road whatsoever that requires a machete. I'm like, that's interesting. So that's pretty much the way I do everything.
Oh, well, we'll definitely get into that. But I want to dial it back even further to, you mentioned that you've been doing creative things even since a kid, right?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it probably took different forms for you. Wasn't necessarily airbrushing at a really young age, but what did that look like? What's the first thing that you remember being like really stoked about as far as something you created and something, whether it was a drawing or painting or whatever creative act it was, but that really stands out to you of saying, hey, I really love this. I want to do more of this.
Well, a little bit of precursor to that. Both my parents were very artistic. My mom was a creative dance major, so she was out there in left field. But she also was a great an artist, a great acrylic artist, watercolor, pastel, and did a lot of palette work. I loved her oil. She didn't touch oils except for palette, which drove my dad insane because my dad was an oil painter. But my mom would steal his paints, and whereas he might get a year's use out of a Winsor & Newton white, she'd kill it in like half a painting. Just, you know, you know, basically I used to say mom's paintings were for the blind. You know, they're very 3D
very
with the
layered
palette. Yeah. Very layered. No, with the palette, that really peaky type stuff, you know, whereas a custom painter, I'm like, that's going to take at least 3 days to block out. Both of them were very encouraging in that, but neither of them did it for a living. My mom was a school teacher. My dad was, he later became a minister, but originally he was a chaplain in the Army, Lieutenant Colonel in the Army. So I grew up like a minister's kid, a preacher's kid, and an Army brat all at the same time. but they never pushed me to do it for a living, but they always encouraged me to draw. It was always like, as long as I was drawing, I could probably get away with not having to do chores. So I found out it was like dad's coming around the mowed lawn's not mowed, get out the drawing bed. Oh, leave Craig alone. And then I still would have to mow the lawn, but with a flashlight. So probably the biggest thing I remember is when I was in elementary school, our Mrs. Mayer, my first grade teacher, and then all the teachers at Millie Munsey Elementary would have like homework folders, and you do your homework folder. And it was the funnest part of school for me was the beginning of Monday. You draw your homework folder. You picked out the paper you wanted, you make it, you fold it, and you draw on it. And whoever had the best folder in the little competition we'd have at lunchtime would then get a piece of candy, get your name up on the board, gold star and forehead, whatever. You know, I can't remember what the gift was, but it was recognition. And then I dug that for a while. Then I realized that I could actually draw folders for other kids, and they would give me things. And so I had no problem not being the best folder in class. I started doing for other kids. And then I realized, wait a second, I can do folders for other kids in other classrooms and make my money or make something candy or get whatever. So they get their recognition, but still win in my classroom. So basically I had pretty much a booming career from that point. And then I realized the ability of art for just my own pleasure, but also art for monetization early on. I never really took it seriously. It was always something not that it came easily. It was difficult, but I've always, things that are easy, I kind of shied away from because I'm not interested in them. Mm-hmm. And the one thing about doing something that's difficult is that even if it's really super difficult, by the time you get to the end of it, no one's going to be there in the room with you. So you don't have to worry about the competition. You have to worry about people. You know, now granted, you might not succeed at what you're doing, but I found you can always find, you know, things close enough to what your goal might have been so you could claim a success. And at the same time, you're still doing things that are in another realm because most people that are of sane mind aren't going to go in the direction you went. So I always liked the difficult. And so if I was bad at something, that actually encouraged me. Now, unfortunately, sometimes you're just not good at something. Thank goodness I never pursued pole vaulting because I sucked at it. I never tried it. I just knew I sucked at it. I'm probably not good at that, but it wasn't one of those things where I was just a psycho. I went after everything that was bad at. But when it came to creativity or it came to certain skills, if I could understand that it wasn't something I had to be born with, or it wasn't a quick twitch muscle or a ligament attachment or a body type that was required, I figured there was always back then the term hack wasn't used, but there was a hack. There was a way to get there. It's like everyone's doing this, takes 20 steps. Well, maybe I could do it differently for 25 steps, or maybe I could find a way to do 15. So I always was looking for ways I could do something. If I truly enjoyed it, I kept with it. If I didn't, I got to it. I'm like, okay, I'm good. And I walk away. Art was one of the ones I was stuck with. Depends on, you know, what it was. But yeah, that's the first time I could really remember getting recognition was in elementary school for that. And it started first grade. And it literally hasn't stopped since.
So how did you end up with airbrush being the thing that you really gravitated towards?
I always was fascinated by the airbrush artists I would see at fairs and circuses and our local state fair in Bakersfield, Kirk County Fair. And they were cool. They were always a long-haired dude. There was this, he was like airbrushing and he would just do cool stuff. Now, looking back on it, not really that cool, but it was for me, it was very cool. I just would dig some of the art. And then there's one guy that would always do cars at some of the events. And I first saw him, and he's a local artist. He's still here in town. His name is Jay Werner. And I didn't even get to ever really meet him until years later when I was painting, when I became an airbrush artist. I met him later. So I never went up and talked to him. I would just watch. And I remember seeing him, and I didn't even know his name until later when someone told us Jay. And so there you go, Jay. You got some props there. Gave you some props. Because every now and then you say, oh, I taught Craig everything he knows. I'm like, not really. I watched a few times. but I remember watching and being fascinated by it. I conned my uncle into getting me one for Christmas, an airbrush. I tried it. This is when I was in seventh grade, maybe seventh grade. And he got me the airbrush and a little Propel can and some crap paint. And I tried, and I remember I was watching someone dude airbrushing on a mirror, and I thought it was really, really cool. And I didn't realize that he wasn't using water-based paint. He used one shot, and there was a lot of other things going on that I missed out on. But I remember thinking it was kind of cool. My aunt had some airbrushed mirrors in her house. She was kind of a hippie. And I was like, okay, so I convinced my uncle, you give me the airbrush, I'm going to make you a cool Grateful Dead mirror. He was a Grateful Dead guy. And he never got the mirror. And I tried 5 minutes with the airbrush, and I put it in the box and said, that's it. I suck at it. And I didn't really see a purpose for it. And I was like, okay, this is not as easy as it seems. As a matter of fact, it wasn't even close because I was doing everything wrong and had everything going against me on it. Literally wrong paint, wrong form of Propel in the airbrush. You know, it was freezing the paint. It was just a nightmare. And no instruction. Back then there was no books. So mm-hmm. I threw it away, didn't touch it again until I was in college. And I had to do a gradated fade on a presentation in, I was an aeronautical engineering major at Laterno College in Longview, Texas. And I was doing a cutaway of a turbine. So I needed a gradated fade. I remember, oh, airbrush would work for this. I don't need to do a detail. So I found an old book and I realized how to use masking and stuff. And he had an airbrush lab at the school that had gone belly up. No one was taking the class anymore. So it was just abandoned. I found it. And their airbrushes were all thrashed. I, for some reason, have brought my airbrush with all of my drawing stuff to Texas. And I dug it out. It still had the paint in it. From junior high. That's, which nothing's changed much. You'll see paint my airbrush is older than my child. So, I cleaned it out. I jerry-rigged it, got it working, figured out how to do a gradated fade. Spent like 3 or 4 hours exacto knifing everything, 5 seconds airbrushing, hooked. Instantly, I saw an effect. I just dug. But I viewed it as an illustration, not freehand, more as just a, part of all my ink and my coloring and my colored pencils and all as a mixed media. And then I needed a really cool fade I didn't want to spend 3 days doing. With any other medium. So the airbrush worked for that. And it slowly, the airbrush started out being my lowest tool. And then eventually it surpassed pen and ink, colored pencil, and other things I was doing. And I was doing even CAD at that time, precursor to CAD. I actually worked for Autodesk doing the beta version of AutoCAD back in the day. So I was doing old stuff, Dyna Perspective, MasterCAD, CAD Master. And so it was below that. It was below my CAD stuff. And then all of a sudden it went above. By the time I was at Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo, I was airbrushing t-shirts and airbrushing wall murals. And then I just continued on from there. And that's how I paid for when I moved to Italy and finished up my degree in architecture in Italy, Piazza Independenza in Firenze, Italy. I actually was working as a t-shirt shop, a kiosk in San Lorenzo, airbrushing t-shirts. And then I was also doing wall murals and doing interior design for an architect. And then paint names on yachts. So I was anything I could do with an airbrush or with art. That's how I paid for my schooling. So that's the long version of everything.
No, but I love it because it really, I think, gives us a peek inside of your outlook and your ability to keep moving forward, looking for more opportunities and, excelling in your craft, setting yourself up with more challenges, setting yourself up with just the path forward, right? Because it could have been very mm-hmm. easy for you to just be like, well, yeah, I did this for my project and it's maybe I'll do it for some personal stuff, but that's kind of where it ends. But you continue to push into that and look for opportunities, it sounds like, and really, harness that so that you were able to have experiences that maybe some other people wouldn't, right?
Yeah, well, you got to make everything your own. It's like if I'm going to play a piece of music, I could play exactly what was written and it might be a David Sanborn arrangement or a Kenny G arrangement, because my instrument was saxophone back in the day. Or I could take it, I could twist it. I could add a Charlie Parker riff. I could add a little Branford Marsalis in there. I could do a little, and you could add something in. You could drag a little. You could maybe anticipate the down. There's all these little things you could do to make it your own. At the same time, you can also do another song in someone else's style, which is always kind of funky. That's always kind of cool. It's the same thing with art. If you don't make it your own, you're just copying someone else's. Now, that's fine. That's a challenge. If you're trying to copy someone else's ability to see if you can get that good, then that's always interesting. But once you get there, it's like, you can't make a career of it because you might be able to copy someone. I always tell people, my students, they're like, well, I'm going to get better than you. I go, you probably will. I go, there's no reason why you couldn't, but you'll never get better than me unless you go beyond what I'm doing, because you could copy every single thing I do, but no matter how good you get, if that's your full goal, you'll still never know what I'm going to do next, because I don't. And you can duplicate everything on the outside of me, but you can't duplicate what's in here. So I always figure the only advantage I have is to take something above and beyond. The worst quote in the world, in my opinion, is if it ain't broke, don't fix it. That's just ignorant, because we would never have anything to this day. Because if it ain't broke is what you currently expect of something. And then if you tomorrow you currently expect it at this level, you're trying to create a standardization or a constant, which doesn't exist. There's only one constant in the world, and it's change. And so if you're trying to set up a standard, everyone else would be beyond you. And just by the sheer fact that everything changes, everything mutates, everything modulates, everything synthesizes, everything is changes every day. People's desires, your clients change, you know, the market changes, your ability, your experiences change. So if you're not changing, you're kind of, you know, failing at whatever you're doing. I guarantee if you're trying to copy or emulate your favorite artist, they didn't get to a goal and stayed there. Excuse me. There are a couple artists in this world that have gotten to a certain level and never went beyond it because they set their sights too low, or because they actually, who knows, you know, maybe they were just happy doing the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. Most of those people just, they were known for, like, you know, in the musical world, they're called one hit wonders. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of reason behind them. You never know. It could be the artist. It could be his situation. It could be the fact that he didn't write that song and the guy that did wouldn't write anymore for him. You're never going to know. All I know is the end result's not appetizing, in my opinion. I want to be known for my last failure, not the one thing I kept doing over and over again until no one wanted me.
Yeah. I think there's the ability to adapt and be flexible with what's happening is really important for, I think, any creative, because if you don't, then that's when you get left behind. That's when, you know, you hit your stride maybe, and then you stay there. You don't grow anymore, and you don't move into new opportunities and new expressions, I think. And you know, creativity is so fluid, and you're always looking for how you can adapt something or change something or combine some things, or, like you said, the challenge, right? The challenge of, it's got to be challenging enough where you're interested to keep going, but not so challenging that you're like, okay, I want to give up. That's it. I'm done. And it can't become so routine that you're just bored, because then it's like, well, what's the point? You know, because then
there's another danger also. If you do everything and you create this perfect, you know, existence of you, of yourself, and you only do this and you're absolutely perfectly labeled and you're consistent. Some people say, hey, at least you're consistent. You know, hey, that's something to be said to that. You can also easily be put into a box. And people always complain, artists love, musicians love to complain about, oh, they're labeling me. No one likes to be labeled. The funny thing is everyone wants attention, yet no one wants to be labeled. But the definition of attention is they know who you are, they know your name, therefore they recognize your style, they recognize you, and all of a sudden you're mad at them recognizing you for it. that's humanity. Get over it. We're all schizophrenic when it comes to that. We all want attention, but we don't want to be recognized for just one thing. We want to be recognized for our sheer ability of being us. It's like, no, they're going to recognize you for what you've done, or what you've said, or what you have done. And then as soon as you become known very, very well for one thing, you are now put into that one thing box. And people always complain. I've had many artists say, how do you get out of that box? How do you prevent it from happening to you? I go, no, people are constantly trying to put it's not, don't feel that they're attacking you with boxes to try and shove you in. That's what we're programmed to do. We're taught to do that. And so everyone, no matter what level, you know, a small child to an adult, they're going to try and categorize you to put you into that box file that they had in the back of their head. It's not for any ulterior Machiavelli reason. It's just for cataloging. But the worst offender is not the other people out there. It's not the art director. It's not the you know, that guy that judges. It's not the art critic. It's not the musical critic. It's not the R&D guy. No, what it is, it's yourself. The worst box that you're ever put into is by the artist himself or the individual himself. We fight everyone else's boxes, and then we create one that we can't ourselves get out of. And that's the biggest issue when people turn around and say, you know, well, what, how do you want to categorize yourself? I'm like, how about I categorize myself as a person that's not necessarily in a category? I have no problem. How about instead of how many baskets do I have, with eggs in them, you know, how many baskets am I juggling right now? There's baskets, there's projects, there's things that I've done in the past. And I'll look at, it's like having a room full of baskets with eggs and some basket sitting there upside down with spider webs. And I'm like, I have no idea what the hell was in that basket, but I know something was in it one day. I'm going to keep it because maybe I'll have something for that basket one day. The one thing about our abilities is, unlike a bag of tricks or a doctor's bag that's a finite, we've got an infinite number of abilities, an infinite number of tools, an infinite number of approaches, an infinite number of anything we want. This is infinite. Everything else is finite. So when people put labels on you, if you're restricted by the label, then it's your fault, not theirs. Just go beyond it. You know, as soon as you do something else, you'll be, yeah, if you do something long enough, people get mad when you change. That's the danger. If you do something the same all the time, when you start making changes, you get mad. You know, people will go to concerts and scream if you play the new stuff. But then if you don't play the new stuff, they say, that guy does nothing but play the old stuff.
Yeah.
And you talk to any professional musician, especially rock musicians, they're like, yeah, they all want the newest album, but then we got to play the old stuff. Eventually, you know, you're going to be playing a 10-hour long concert if you're successful. You know, the Stones probably could play a 25-hour concert if they played all their music. They ain't going to do it. They could barely do a couple hours right now. So they have to select. And now, how did he do it? He did it by listening, but not taking 100% advice. In other words, listening, but not doing everything the public wants. You know, you need to test the waters, but do not jump and leave and stay in there forever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Test the waters and then go and do your own. If your patrons, your clients, whatever industry you're in, creatively speaking, if they loved one thing you did, you probably didn't do that just for that one person's love. You did it because you were inspired to do it. So if you want to keep them liking your artwork, continue doing what you did ahead of time. Everyone has a tendency of forgetting how they got somewhere. They want to get somewhere and create another way, a better way of getting somewhere else. Trust me. The way you got there is the way you need it. It's your foundation. Continue forward.
Yeah. So I want to ask you a question that I'm sure you've been asked a million times, and this probably leads back to your conversation about the machete, right? Making that path. But
I left my prop at the shop. I've got my old my dad's Vietnam machete. It's like,
nice.
always frightens students when you describe the machete concept of art.
Yes. So, you know, the question I'm sure that, again, you've probably been asked over and over again is like, how did you become a licensed Disney artist and be able to work with like Lucasfilm and like that whole thing? So many people, I think, would say that's maybe a goal that they have, that they would love to have their work, you know, in that category. So how does that happen? How did that happen for you? I know you said that's kind of like a probably off to the side route that you got there, but fill us in a little bit on that.
Well, you just really like that story from the thing. For those of you out there, me and Mike just got finished doing the thing conference, and I had that as part of my presentation. It's the perfect example of like, this is my life. And some people go, oh, I love that. Some people go, oh my God, that's frightening. Okay, stay away from it. I've got people all the time that ask me, especially with Disney, when you get involved with Disney, it's even worse when you get involved with Lucasfilm and do stuff with Star Wars, and then you get a whole other crowd of people to ask you. Luckily, it's kind of all together now with Disney. But and they honestly ask me legit questions like, how do you get in? And I'm not a secret guy. I've written the books and done the videos back when people said, oh, don't tell all my secrets in your book. I'm like, I don't know you. How can I tell your secrets? By the way, if I don't know you and I know your secrets aren't very good. I don't believe in that. I believe in like, here's all the information. Now go hang yourself with all the info I gave you. I'll give you everyone enough rope. You know, it depends on, it's not as easy as the description. So the thing is that with Disney, I had worked for Disney off and on, but through subsidiaries, other companies, as an artist working with Disney. But I never worked directly for them, never got checked from them. Always have loved Disney, been a huge fan of Disney. Rode the Haunted Mansion when it was open, the first 3 months it was open, rode it on my mom's lap when I was four. I've been there countless times. But I had approached a couple of times back in the day wanting to work for Imagineering. And also wanting to work for ILM and some different companies out there. And just when I ran into people that had been part of it, they weren't as conciliatory towards helping me. At the same time, it seemed like they were just very, very labeled in one job. So I kind of avoided it. I was approached by by them. And now the Whale's approach is totally different. It wasn't at a gallery show. It was actually a guy named Gary Maggette, who was in charge of entertainment and food services, I believe, at Disneyland and California Adventure here. He might have been also affiliated with Disney World. He approached me for the food and wine event at California Adventure to do an onstage demonstration. And he had heard about me through some people, and that I did really good on, I could airbrush on stage, and I was fast, and I could talk, and I was entertaining. I wasn't wooden. So he was trying to get a hold of me, and he was friends with Guy Fieri. Now, at this time, Guy Fieri is my client, still is, and I was supposedly going to be at Guy's birthday party. Now, I was on a job, actually not even in the country, and I was doing something for Guy, so I wasn't even, I think I was either in Mexico or I was in South Africa. I was somewhere doing a job for Guy, and I couldn't make his birthday party. So Gary went there looking for me. Guy didn't remember where I was at. So Guy's like, oh, he's here somewhere. It's like 1,000 people at this party. So he's looking for me, couldn't find me. Guy's all, well, there's another airbrush artist here. It's a good friend of Craig, and you can talk to him. He can get a hold of Craig, or he'll have you do the job. And it was Aaron Hagar, who's a really good friend of mine, happens to be Sammy Hagar's son. Now, I've actually never met Sammy. So people say, oh, what's Sammy like? I don't know. I love him. I've always been into his music. I don't know Sammy. I've only known his son. I know his son because his son is an amazing artist. You ever check out Aaron Hagar, our Rat Runner's Garage. He builds cars. He's a phenomenal artist. And he approached, and so Gary hit him up, and Aaron's like, yeah, Craig's like, he's on a job somewhere. He's not even around. And so he told him the offer, and Aaron's like, yeah, I don't really go up on stage and do artwork. I don't, you know, I do artwork, but I'm not going to do something on stage. And Rick goes, Craig would totally be into that. So he had my number, and he got a hold of me and said it was okay to give this guy. And I'm like, yeah, sure, I don't care. So Gary Maggette contacted me, asked me if I'd be on stage for an event. I did one thing. Was a 2-day event that I went on there and did 2 different paintings, 2 different weekends. So I did 4 paintings for him, submitted them, whatever, got approved, went and did it, dealt with it, got paid for the pieces, and had a blast. They called me to do another event to do it again. And then they all of a sudden wanted to license me. At that point, they wanted me to actually work with them so I could do actually Disney stuff through the galleries. Because at this point, I wasn't part of the gallery art system. I was part of their entertainment. And they were phasing out the live demonstrations that were going to be for the food and wine event. They're going to be more food oriented, which made sense to me. I enjoyed it. You know, because Guy was there too. So it was perfect. I had a hang with Guy. I got to meet Kat Cora. I got to meet a number of people that I had. And so I had a blast doing it. But they wanted me to be in the galleries to do stuff for the park system, the park galleries and other Disney. So I went ahead, and I was already at that time licensed by Lucasfilm through Acme to do stuff. So that worked out even better. And that got me into Disneyland doing the artwork and having my artwork, not just in California, but also in Anaheim. I mean, also in Orlando. And then it also allowed me to present, and the way my contract was, I could present concepts to them and they would approve or disapprove them. And I also got a chance to do the guitars. I did the 50th anniversary painting of the Pirates of the Caribbean, also did the 50th anniversary for Haunted Mansion and did a series of guitars for Haunted Mansion, which was the first also. So it allowed me to do my own thing. So I got to work for Disney without being pretty much do this.
Right.
They every now and then will ask me to do something. Very rarely. I'd say 5% of what I do for Disney is upon their request on like, here's an idea, or see if you can run it. They usually bring me in as a person from left field. But my work with Lucasfilm also got me the ability of working with Francisco Herrera, who's a phenomenal artist and licensed by Disney, to work with him in Galaxy's Edge, the Star Wars. We called it Star Wars Land when they were first building it because it didn't have a name yet. And I got a chance to work with him in that. And then that got me also the attention. Lucasfilm and Disney realized, oh, wait, this guy's already on. We need some fine art in there and we're going to sell. So they commissioned me as well as about a half dozen other artists to do a series of paintings that were going to be on display at Doc Ondar's antiquarium. So that got me that. So if you look at all these things that it's gotten me, and then also working with those guys got me my foot in the door with Imagineering, not as an Imagineer, but as a consultant. And I've been brought in through a couple different Imagineering groups to consult and work with them. And I got a chance to meet some of the head people of Imagineering that are great people. And so every now and then I get a chance to work with the park on something. And then work on fine art. So I was able to bridge the gap none of this would have been from me applying because the job didn't exist. Not to mention the fact I probably wouldn't have made it through the approval process. Mm-hmm. I had a friend of mine that was a very, very good, very well-known Disney artist that told me point blank, because he asked me, we're talking about the big ask. He's like, what would you like? And I go, I'd like to get into Disney. I think it'd be fun. This is years ago. And he was like, it's not going to happen. I'm like, why? He goes, Disney just laid off a lot of artists. This is like maybe a decade ago. He's like, and it's really tough to get in right now. And Craig, you're not a Disney artist. Look at what you paint. Look at the stuff you do. And I'm like, I view it as a challenge, but it wasn't a challenge where I'm like, yeah, we'll see. I didn't set off on it. But I won't lie and say that as soon as Gary Majetti said, hey, we'd like to have you in Disneyland doing the live demo, in the back of my head's all.
Yeah.
So, man, that's it. I mean, it's a rat's nest. And some people say, how do you keep track of it? You don't. Mm. You don't. You just flow. Yeah. Mm. Just go let it happen. Opportunity doesn't knock once, it knocks all the time. If you're lucky, you answer a few of them and it works out. If not, the knocking just beats the hell out of you. Or you become deaf to it and then you sit around crying why you never have the opportunity. It's like, because you never took it.
Yeah.
It's out there.
How much of it do you think is, let me show up, do the best work that I can with what's before me and keep mm-hmm. doing that long term versus doing that, yes, but then also having access to people who are in either influential positions or have some other connections, you know, being in the quote, you know, right place, right time kind of thing. Do you have a sense of like how much of that is in what category?
You know, it's the way I live is the way I cook. I don't use measurements. My grandma didn't. In the kitchen, you'd have to dodge the pads of butter flying across the kitchen, landing in the pot. And everything was done to taste. Everything was done. And then if something went wrong, she could always figure it out. Someone that follows instructions, if something goes wrong, just sits there going, why? Because they followed the instructions, but you didn't follow them exactly. You didn't understand them. I think the big mistake people make is to try and find that formula. Mm-hmm. There is a rough formula. There's a rough idea. It's one size does not fit all. This is not a spandex environment. And spandex is not a right. It's a privilege. For those fashion sets, spandex is not on me for good reason. But when people look for these things and they're trying to, I've had people say, well, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And I'm like, I've heard the other way around. You know, form follows function, function follows form. It's an argument in engineering and aesthetics that goes back decades. Mies van der Rohe is the first one to quote it in architecture. I always say form and function are both ends of the seesaw. You want a balance, and the balance is not necessarily equal in proportion, equal in functionality or aesthetic. Same thing in life. It's like some of these things, like when people say it's not what you know, it's who you know. I'm like, you know, it's not what you know. It's not who you know. It's what people think you know and who people think you know. Perception is reality. Now, the caveat to that is some people say, oh, we need to take it on, make it. I go, no. It'll be fake it till you break it. You can only fake things so far. You know, I tell people perception is reality. You know, you better make sure that your butt can catch every check your mouth writes. A lot of people don't understand that. Now, have I gone in and over my head sometimes? Sure. But always in the background, knowing I could just either muck my way through it, figure out a way, have my, you know, want to be a millionaire lifeline call. I always had a way out in the back of my head. If not, I could always figure, it was never something that monumentally, it wasn't like someone asked me to perform brain surgery, I'll figure it out. No, I'm not going to do something like that. As long as it's not something that would be catastrophic. Now, I've described some of my situations I've gotten involved with companies and people go, oh my God, it would have the balls to do that. It doesn't take balls. If you fill your head with all the possibilities of failure, then no one in their right mind, it doesn't matter how big your cojones are, no one in the right mind would ever take that job. You know, there's a certain level where it's like, that's just stupid. You know, but if you look at all the possibilities of success and you weigh them against the failure is not that big a deal. You know, people never remember, you know, the failures in the horrible life. They'll use them as object lessons or whatever, which means if you failed at something and you use an object lesson later on, actually, it's probably more substantial than your success. People are more interested. I'm more interested in failure than success. The reason is success comes when you do something right. And you can either do it because someone else taught you, so it wasn't yours. It was an accident. You know, it just happened. do it twice. I'll be impressed if you can do it twice. It's like a slop shot. It's the reason they don't take slop shots in billiards, because that shot where you bounce it off the person's head, it hit the ceiling and all of a sudden knocked the eight ball in. Yeah, you didn't call that. So I'm not, do it twice and I'll let you have it for that game. The same thing in life. But if you fail at something, there's always a way around it. True success, in my opinion, comes from failure. If it doesn't, it's someone else's, it was an accident, or basically it's easy. Anyone can do it. So I'm more interested in failure. People don't pursue things that way. You know, they rarely want to, even though it's a common trait, like that Robert Frost poem, you know, the road less traveled. That's failure. The road traveled all the time. Can you go down that road? Sure you can. And you could probably on your own with your own abilities do something different on the easy road. Sometimes the easy road is just the best one. But you never know that and take the hard one. You take the hard road if you realize there's this hard road that sucks. Then maybe don't do it anymore. But always keep in the back of your mind, because something you learned on that road, you might be able to use for something else. That's the whole formula. There's not like this one thing where I can point out and say, yeah, it's that, yeah, it's that. My favorite is still perception is reality. Until, and this is the second part, this is my part, because you always hear perception is reality. Perception is reality until it meets reality. Then we see where the rubber meets the road. Then we see what you've got. Because I've seen great con artists that then when you call them on it, they all of a sudden can do it. And you're like, oh, if you were a con artist, I go, or they're a good con artist and he knew you were going to call them on it. And the only thing they could do was that. I always look at, if you really think about it, people, I love con artists. And people say, that's horrible to say. I go, no. The original term con artist, con stood for con. They used to be called confidence scams or confidence artists. A good confidence artist will build the confidence of everyone around them, have everyone believe in them to the ultimate, then we'll take their money. But if you think about it, the difference between a successful businessman, a successful artist, successful musician, anything successful that is not status quo, the difference between them and a con artist is the end game. So if you are, if you've conned people your whole life, yet they've always walked away happy, no one has ever been disgruntled, and you never ripped anybody off, then you are a good confidence artist. You're just not a criminal confidence artist. And that's important. I approach everything in that. You know, perception is more important than anything, in my opinion. Now, do I give off a good first impression? Not necessarily, because I think that's also a standard. People say, oh, you know, because I've made horrible first impressions on people. You know, the second impression is much more important. I always give people more than one chance to be an ass in front of me. But at the same time, if I look at someone that's really good, I'm also thinking about back in my mind, maybe they're only good at that one thing. So I never give a good or bad first impression or pay attention to that. I'm always looking for what's, you know, the perception. Am I being fooled or am I not being fooled? And I'm always more interested in being fooled, because the person, you know, it's for my own self-preservation. I don't want to be fooled again, you know, like the Who song, you know, but as I'm watching someone do something, I'm trying to figure out, what is he doing that's difficult? What is he not doing? What could I add? What's the one thing I could do that by itself is useless, but attached to that, what they're doing would be even better than what they're doing. And that's the juice. You know, that's the part that keeps me going. It's not, you know, I don't sit in front of my paintings and just, you know, oh, I love my painting. No,
yeah.
I love working on them. I love the challenge. You know, they always say the worst part of a painting is that blank canvas there. You know, I love that because it can be anything. And then the middle is like, meh, I'm going to get through this. At the very end, I'm like, okay, finalizing it. But I also do not dwell on it. I'm like, I have caught up. And then it's like, oh, I could always do so much better. Yeah, on the next one. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that explained a lot to you. I saw where you're going with that question, and that's why I kind of diverted over here.
Yeah. No, I think that's good. I think it's good because I think that's stuff that people don't necessarily talk about. And people enter into this.
It's sure not taught in the
yeah.
Trust me, in 10 years of college, it's not taught.
yeah, exactly. And I think it's the things that people wrestle with and the questions that they ask and the motivations behind it. Like, there's so much there that a lot of people don't take the time to really dissect and then get into these conversations and go, oh yeah, like maybe I need to reframe the way I'm thinking about something or the way that I'm approaching something, or even why am I going towards this creative goal or whatever it is. Right. I'm sure that you've probably had experiences where you thought like, hey, if I could do this, this would be amazing. And then you got that and you're like, you know what? That wasn't actually all that great. Right.
No, be careful what you wish for. is very important in my life. And the reason is that I was forced to watch Twilight Zone. It didn't force me to. I love Twilight Zone. But the Twilight Zone marathon, which I think it used to be, it was either on Thanksgiving night or it was on New Year's Eve. It was sometime, I can't remember, they used to have Thanksgiving, they used to have the big marathon. And it was the only time when I was really little that I was allowed to stay up all night long with my uncle. And my uncle Neil was a musical genius, just a genius, just out there in left field. And I loved him. He was just fascinated because you did not know what he was going to talk about next. And he introduced me all kinds of weird art and weird music and stuff. And we'd watch that. And he was always like, that is, yeah, every major theme of that is be careful what you wish for. Because you haven't thought of, it's like watching the movie Wishmaster. It's based on the old story, The Monkey's Paw. Be careful what you wish for. Aladdin's lamp, the three wishes. It always goes back to unwishing everything because you didn't think through on everything. And that's what's really, really important, is that understand that I don't look at it in a negative way. You can be very negative and say, well, hell, it's not worth wanting anything if what you get's not what you want. I'm like, yeah, but it's always interesting to see if you can get a little bit of it. I mean, also, you know, you may not get what you want, but you get what you need. You know, and your need, your want is not necessarily always consistent with your need, and your needs do vary from time to time, and so do your wants, but they're very, very rarely in together. So whenever I get to something and I'm like, you know, I buy something or I get to something or I work for this one person I always wanted to work for, I'm always like, damn, it's not really, I'm fascinated with that. I could be easily depressed. I'm fascinated with how screwed up my perception was on it. It's like, dang. Okay. And some people just would be upset by that, saying, man, after all these years, you found it still just as stupid as you always were. No, I'm like, thank goodness I am. Because then it's something interesting. It's like, okay, I still got things to work on. That's nice. You know, the end of something. I hate getting to the end of books. The only good part about getting to an end of a book is I can start another. It's the same thing. It's like, man, have you ever watched a movie you didn't want to end? Well, guess what? You shouldn't want to like it. You should want to be watching the best movie ever. Where you get this one part, man, it sucked. Okay, well, let's delve into why, or let's avoid that at all costs. Mm-hmm. So that's how I view that.
Yeah, yeah. What's been most surprising to you about your journey so far?
Well, I mean, that people put up with my ass. Because it's like I always tell people my dad used to always say, oh, squeaky wheel gets greased. And I know my limitations. I'm like, yeah, squeaky wheel gets greased until the smart person gets rid of the squeaky wheel and puts a new wheel on. So by definition, what I am is temporary in many people's lives and in many things, especially with companies designed to do something a specific way. And all of a sudden I'm in their path and I'm like, yeah, and then I'm going over here. I'm done. You know, people always make the mistake of thinking, oh, everything's going great and the company went in a different direction. Maybe the company didn't go in a different direction. Maybe you were, and the worst thing you could have done was change direction to go with the company, because then you think you're just staying the same and you're actually stifling yourself. I remember working for Jesse James for a number of years, and we're still friendly. I still text him every now and then, whatever. But I worked for him for a couple of years, 2 or 3 years, and he would make a comment, man, you know why you've been with me this long? And Jesse James goes through, back then he went through painters like he go through, you know, underwear. I mean, and he had a number of different people work for him at different times. And very, very cool dude to work for, very difficult, because he is a perfectionist to an extent, demands the same level of quality that he does, but he also demands you to put in extra hours. And I had no problem with that. So we were very similar. We were more friends than workers. I didn't work for him all the time. I would just do the design stuff with him and paint somebody. And he made a comment saying, you know, the reason you've been with me so long. And I'm like, and I hadn't been with him that long. So I was like, oh God, what's this mean? And he was like, oh. And he's like, because you don't put up with my bullshit. You know, you just laugh at me. You'll just like, okay, yeah, this is what I'm doing anyway. This is why, you know, instead of like agreeing to me, you'd say, well, no, this is why I'm not going to do what you want me to do. And I go, yeah, but that only works so far. I go, the reason you've kept me this long is also the reason eventually I won't work for you anymore. And he was like, well, that doesn't make any sense. I go, yeah, it does. I go, because I don't kiss your ass. But after a while, all those people in line smooching, you start liking that smooch on the butt. And then not only that, that long line of people eventually become powerful enough to start hinting like, hey, why is that guy not in line? And then I get the conversation like, hey, you know, Craig, you need to kind of get in line. It won't mean anything, but just kind of get in line. I go, that's the way. I go, and that's not any, and trust me, the most probably self-assertive person, powerful personality I've ever met in my life was Jesse James. Very knows exactly what he wants, what he's doing. The perception you see on TV is absolute bullshit, yet at the same time, absolute truth. The way he is on there. But the perception of him and the reason he does things, no one will ever know unless you actually know. But the thing about it is that even that, you know, he's going to be, I'm sorry, it's called physics, you know? I don't care how strong you are, how clever you are. If you know the acceleration of gravity, you know, and you don't know, it doesn't help you. It's like, oh, I know that it's 32 feet per second per second. Okay, then if I jump off the building knowing that, am I going to be less hurt than the other person? Yeah. No, it doesn't make any difference. There's certain things you can't physically get around. There's certain things you can. You know, there's certain rules you can bend, certain rules you can break, and certain rules you stay away from. And that was the one common thing. Now, I have never been fired from a job in my life. Now, that is not because I'm a good employee. It's because I'm an aware employee. I know exactly when I'm being called in the office. Hey, Craig, I want to talk to you about something. Yeah, I want to talk to you also. Oh, what do you want to say? I quit. and then I go, what did you want to say? No, we're good. Which meant you're fired. I have always known exactly when that red blinking light in the corner, that career dissipation light from that whatever movie that was in. Hey, that light in the black era, that's your career dissipation light. It's an overdrive. I have been aware of that constantly. I know that I am an acquired taste. At the same time, after a while, that acquired taste gets better in my mouth. Unless you're going the same direction I am. And not only that, don't think I'm going to leave you. You're going to go in your own direction. And if you're not, and you just follow me, I'm going to start kicking to the curb. I don't like hangers on. I like doing something different. Some people that have followed me along, I was like, this, if you're not following me because it's your path, you're following me because it's my path, I will be I'll step into the pitch. I will kick you to the curb because I don't want to be the person blamed for ruining your life because you decided to follow me. Now that sounds kind of arrogant, but I've had people work for me that were just putting way too much faith in my direction. And I was like, this is not yours. Well, what is mine? I don't know. I can give you some ideas. And if you fail, say thank you, because that's good. You want to fail. I don't know why I grew up this way. My parents, my dad, I think it was when I was first going to college, I was getting ready to go to college. And I remember he took me aside and he says, you know, make sure that, understand that college is a tryout. If you screw up, who cares? If you don't fall into something you hate and think you're obligated to me, your mom, or to the world, or to your teacher, to your school, you know, or to your perception of what you should do. And don't do that because you'll be miserable your whole life. So try it. If you don't like it, try something else. I'm like, okay. He goes, it's just a tryout. It's like life light. You know, it's like the safe mode of life. And I'm like, okay, of life. And I'm like, okay. And then I remember we had this another conversation 10 years later. And he was like, you know, Craig, you can actually finish a degree and you can actually leave college. You don't need to go to like four colleges in 10 years. At that point, he's like, great. Great. He just did. I'm like, no, this is great. And you know, you have a lot of student loans. Yeah, but they're deferred. And as long as I keep going to school, I can go to school theoretically until I'm 80. And my dad's like, oh God, I created a Frankenstein. So Franken student. But you know, that's the thing about me. I don't know where it came from. I can't really tell you. I can tell you it works for me. Some people have told me that they tend to do a different version of what I'm doing. And they're being a contrarian or being just doing it. I'm like, it's not, don't buck the system for the sake of bucking the system. But don't go along with the system for the sake of going along with the system.
No, it totally makes sense.
I could have saved 10 minutes by saying that. You know? That's how I roll, bro.
It's the machete.
Sometimes I'll use the machete when you can just walk through the path. You know, sometimes swinging the machete when there's nothing in your way. They say it's pointless. I go, but no one will ever get near you. No one will ever think of stopping that guy. Oh, you know something? He's got something going on. We're gonna leave him alone. Yeah, let him fight something. Yeah,
that's good. So we're coming to the top of our time, but I want to talk about also your podcast and just, you know, your where people can find your work. And so tell us a little bit more about your podcast. Why you're doing that? What's that all about?
Well, the podcast is called This May End Badly with Craig Frazier, and you can subscribe to it on our YouTube channel, This May End Badly. And you can also go to Facebook Live at Craig Frazier Studios Facebook page every Tuesday at 5:00 Pacific Standard Time, Cali time, is when we do it. You can click on and you can participate. You can ask questions of my guests. And I've had some pretty decent guests on there, some pretty heavy hitters. I think this coming Tuesday, we've got John Kosmoski coming on from House of Color. But we've had Doug Jones, who was the actor in Shape of Water. Had a lot of really great guests. You can go on there and ask questions or just make, you know, say, hey, I'd rather you do this guest next time or try this. We talk about different things in the industry. What I bring on there, they're not just all artists. What I'm looking for is creative entrepreneurs, people doing things that don't fit in the mold. People not necessarily like me, but when you squint real hard, they kind of look like me, you know? So it's like people that I kind of look up to are people that I see along the same path. And I love it when they're not involved with art. I love seeing someone in a completely different industry doing what I'm doing the same way. It's a nice way. It's like, it's kind of like a skillet and key. It works in a lot of different doors.
Yeah.
So that's who I invite on there. I also do what's called a time lapse. Not every episode. If I'm out of state and I'm doing the episode remotely with my partner's Ricky Bird from Hectic Films, another company that a great little independent film company here in Bakersfield. I do a lot of work with him on his movies. Check out Hectic Films. He has some cool stuff out there. But when I'm in town, I do a time lapse of a painting, a little 12x12 inch painting. There's two of them out there. You can go online and find them. And then when I'm done doing the time lapse on the podcast, sometimes it has to do with the interview. Sometimes I do it just for the hell of it. I then will sell them online. So you can purchase them. They're not available on my website. They're only available on my social media, which is either Craig Frazier Studios on Facebook, Craig Frazier Studios Instagram page. You can also find Craig Frazier. I think it's at Von Frazier, VonFraser. And that's my original personal Instagram page, which is on there too. So all those ways you can find me on social media. That's my most current stuff, is social media and the podcast. I also have CraigFraserStudios.com, which has some artwork on it, some prints you can order, has some old blogs on there that I'm going to probably take those blogs and make them into episodes on the new podcast I'm doing. And then I'm going to be bringing my podcast links into my website soon. Right now, it's not there. I'm going to be doing that. And I've got a bunch of other stuff on this. You can go check out that website. You want to check out the old website. It's called Got Paint, Got Paint, like Got Milk. Gotpaint.com. That website has been up and running since 93. It is officially the oldest custom paint site out there. And it is a dinosaur. There's probably some front page 1.0 in there. Some stuff that should not be working. This is like you take a core sample of my website. It's got a bunch of old stuff from back in the days, Cal Concepts, Air Syndicate, KGB, which is our clothing company, Customs Gone Bad. And so people like going checking that old stuff out. I'm going to be incorporating that stuff eventually into a new site that's going to have both Craig Frazier Studios and the Got Paint stuff all put together. But right now we're still kind of it's one of the baskets. It's not empty, but it's got like half an egg and it's in the corner. I'm kind of I get to it eventually. I'm more interested in other stuff right now.
Yeah. Well, you certainly have a lot going on, and that's just, I think, part of that is learning of, okay, which thing am I dealing with now, and what can I get to when I get to it, and prioritizing all that stuff. Yeah.
Sometimes I have a purpose. Sometimes I wake up in the morning, I know I've got to do these things and these. And then if there's nothing that's really screaming deadline at me, because I, being an architect, past architect, I'll never certified, but I like deadlines. It'll just be like, okay, who's screaming the loudest? Or I go to my shop and it's almost like, Tom Hanks making potato salad in that one movie. What's it called? The Bachelor Party. And who's the lucky spice, and closes his eyes and grabs something and just, it's paprika. That's with me in my art. It's like, okay, let's work on that over there. Haven't touched him in a while. And that's just my day. 24/7, I sleep, but also Saturdays and Sundays, I'm doing something. I have my studio at my shop, my studio here at my house. And then when I'm on the road, I'm like you, Mike. I got my Procreate, got my iPad.
Yeah,
I got my studio with me. So I'm always doing something. And then I also, if you want to follow my daily sketches, a while back, someone wanted me to do Inktoberfest. I'm not really a joiner. I'm like, meh, I'm not really interested. And then I was like, maybe I should just, I draw every day anyway. I don't need to draw every day because I do it already. I was like, well, maybe I'm going to try drawing every day that has nothing to do with my business.
Yeah.
Just for the hell of it. And I set aside, it's no less than 15 minutes, no more than an hour. And it can't be by itself. I got to be doing something else important, like watching TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, looking at the same way.
So I'm just like, I look and it can't be a new movie. Nothing with subtitles because I'll miss the whole damn thing.
Yeah.
Because I'll be something I've seen 20 times. Like Avatar. I know, you know, it's like, you know, I know all the sound effects myself. So I'm just, you know, looking up every now and then. It's something that distract me. Something where I feel like I'm not wasting any of my important television time by drawing. And then it wasn't monetized. I was just like, I'm not going to sell them. I'm going to keep them in my little sketchbook. Well, I started doing that, meant to do it for 1 year. That was 1,408 or nine drawings ago. So I'm at 1,409, I think. And you can check those out on my Vaughn Fraser Instagram, but also on my Craig Fraser Facebook page. They pop up there. Every night I do one. And it's funny, I didn't intend to monetize it. There's been three or four Disney paintings I've done, licensed Disney projects based on a sketch.
Yeah.
Where like one of my Disney, like my guys I work with is like, hey, that would be a good painting. I'm like, yeah. And so I make some modifications, of course, and then it becomes the basis of that. I've also tattoos. People say, I want that as a tattoo. I've had people want to buy the sketch. Mike, it's not for sale. I'll buy the little sketch, not for sale. I'll buy all the sketchbooks. I'm like, there's about 13 or 14 sketchbooks by now. They're not for sale. And they're just like, everything's for sale. I'm like, yeah, so these aren't. Just so that when you tell people everything's for sale, you can have the caveat. Everything's for sale except Craig's sketchbook, but everything else in the world's for sale. So how about that? And they get mad. And I thoroughly enjoy that because I'm a sadist when it comes to people that are really insistent on things that I'm not.
Well, and I've had the privilege of being a part of that recently.
Not only that, you're in the sketchbook and you got a motor coming out of your head. So you're a blower head. Because only a certain number of things get blower heads or motors come out of their heads. That's an old Ed Roth crazy car thing I used to do. When I was a kid, I would draw pictures of people with motors come out of their heads. I imagine M. Night Shyamalan will make a horror movie out of that someday.
Well, that was a great privilege. That was a great privilege for me. So thank you. I appreciate it. I'm always drawing other people, and to have somebody draw me, especially you.
Well, it was only fair. You've got at least two or three different drawings of me on stage at the thing. I was like, somebody needs to draw Mike.
Greatly appreciate it. So
no problem, man.
Well, I want to thank you for this time today. This has been awesome. I feel like we could talk for like days. I love when I get to talk with fellow creatives like this and we get into like the deep stuff. And I know this is the stuff that's going to be helpful for people who are just trying to figure out their right next steps and make sense of where they are on their path, where they want to go. And sometimes just have the context and hearing other people's stories and experiences and going, oh, okay, you know what? I'm not alone in those things. Or this helps me navigate better and not feel like I'm just kind of out here on my own trying to forge my own path, you know. So, greatly appreciate it. And man, I can't wait till we get to hang out again soon, you know.
Oh no, I'm looking forward to it. I'm not sure when that'll be, but you know, with everything being locked down, who knows. But I'll either see the thing or I'll be the guy in the Mad Max car with the mohawk and you could have the big face mask, you know, go away. Just take the fuel and leave. Oh, it's Craig. Hey, Craig.
Somehow I think that's probably more likely.
See you in the dystopian apocalypse.
Yes. That sounds like a date.
My guys will have really cool artwork on their cars. So
for sure.
Thanks for listening today. I'd appreciate it if you would subscribe, leave a rating and a review. It really helps this podcast be seen and heard by others.